It's actually to be here for a few days is, you know, we just scratched the surface of what it was like to have the association of a pure devotee. And even if our whole life or many lifetimes, really, I mean, I can't give you any understanding about Srila Prabhupada, because I don't know him at all. But I can share with you some of the things that were very special to me and hopefully increased my attachment to him. I was telling one devotee earlier about how we had to get up 3:30 this morning to get to the airport to catch the flight, and I woke up just before the alarm went off and I was having a dream about Srila Prabhupada. And it was a very emotional dream. But and I woke up just before it got really, really emotional. I'm Italian descent and I have a tendency to cry. And in the dream I was just about to reach that point, and somehow or other I woke up. She was having trouble sleeping all night. We get excited about traveling to temple. So anyway, it was very nice, just that feeling, because seeing Srila Prabhupada, and for me, it's like, it's everything that we live for, is just that Prabhupada consciousness. And it's, you know, hopefully we'll feel some Prabhupada consciousness. I'm sure all of you do, very often. And again, for us, for Prabhupada's disciples, I know last year, when we were in New York, Satsup Maharaj, he gave a talk. And he's very funny when he talks about Prabhupada whenever he sees me, because he'll always say Shruti Kirti should talk, because he was, you know, he's the storehouse. But anyway, he was talking and he said, practically, it was the best time of my life, is being with Srila Prabhupada. So whatever we do for us, and we'll spend the rest of our life just trying to serve Srila Prabhupada because of what he gave us. And of course he's given us everything, but the most wonderful thing was Prabhupada's association. And to have that separation, of course, is also its own kind of sweetness. Prabhupada said it's the greatest love, is service and separation. That's real love. So I do all this, you know, sometimes in a very selfish way, because I feel very close to Prabhupada when I speak about him and can feel Prabhupada's presence. And when I was picked up today by the devotee, he said, oh, I guess you go around and you tell these stories over and over. And I said, yes, I said, but no one, you never get tired of hearing about Srila Prabhupada. Once, and I'll tell you, in the very first personal service I did to Srila Prabhupada, before I was even his personal servant, but it was my first personal service to him, was read Krishna book. And that was in the garden in Los Angeles. And one time I was looking for a story, and Prabhupada stopped me and he said, read anywhere. He said, Krishna's like a sweet ball. He said, wherever you bite is sweet. So whatever you say, it doesn't matter, these stories again and again about Krishna. The stories are unlimited, but we have so many we see in Krishna book in the 10th canto. But say them over. Prabhupada would read Krishna book, you know, again and again. So it's like that, talking about the pure devotee of Krishna. It's sweeter. Krishna says it's even sweeter to hear about the activities of the pure devotee of Krishna. So, you know, I hope we can all experience that, and I hope I can relate a little bit of that to you over the next few days. And with that being said, we'll kind of start at the beginning for me, and then tonight, and then hopefully some of you or all of you will be here each evening and each morning, so we'll kind of open up more and more. And in that, hopefully we can open up our hearts and just feel Srila Prabhupada. Because we're all here because of one person. And I don't care who, you know, you might have brought you to the temple or you're initiated by or anything else. We're all here because of one person. That one person is Srila Prabhupada. Wherever you go in the world, every corner of the world, his footprint has been put there in one way or another. In so many places, literally, his footprint has been there. And that that catalyst has just made devotees everywhere. So all these, everyone that comes now for generations, it's all because of the activities of this one person. Imagine Srila Prabhupada, his potency, his purity, his desire, his love for everyone, his love of Krishna, his compassion for everyone in this material world. So that compassion came to me in 1971. I met the devotees in Philadelphia. I'm an American boy. And I met the devotees in Philadelphia on April 22nd of 1971. And I moved into the temple 1 week later. And immediately, I wound up in New Vrindavan under the guidance of Kirtanananda. New Vrindavan was the first farm project in ISKCON. It became very big. It was started in about 1969. And as many of us at that time, it was very special. The 60s, the late 60s and the early 70s, it was very special. And Prabhupada was certainly part of that speciality that was there. It was just there. And Garga Muni, he says something very funny, because he became a devotee. He was 17 years old, and he joined like in 1966. And he said, just like all, you know, so many of us that came, we were rejecting everything our parents tried to give us in the us Westerners in England, Europe, and America. Our parents worked so hard to give us the right educations and to get us set up so we could make money and have a nice life. And in America, we would say the house with the white picket fence around it, you know. And car in the garage. Now it's two or three cars in the garage. And like that. But we had, you know, so many of us had this understanding that we just weren't happy. And we rejected everyone. In the West, in America, they would say, don't trust anyone over 30. Right? That was our, when we were 18, 19, don't trust anyone over 30. That was what we would say. So here was this person. He was 70, and we all fell at his feet, because he was the most revolutionary person. That's what Garga Muni said. We were so revolutionary, he said, but here we were surrendering to Prabhupada, who was 70 years old. But he was in a whole, he was transcendental to all our ideas of rejecting everything. Huh? He really gave us the understanding. So, anyway, I was a devotee for, you know, 3 months when I met Prabhupada, and I was, like I said, I was in Pittsburgh and New Vrindavan, and the first thing I was hearing, when we came to the temple, Krishna book had just come out, the second volume, I think, you know, George Harrison paid for the first volume of Krishna book, and when you saw devotees, if you were open, everything they said, you just, like a sponge, you know, they told you all about Krishna, they told you about the material body, they answered all our questions, you know, what am I doing here, you know, who am I, why am I here, why am I suffering, why aren't I happy, who is God, they had an answer for everything. Hare Krishnas are, they say this everywhere, that you have an answer for everything, and that's the absolute truth, bro. But said, the absolute truth means, when you hear something, you can't reject it. It's truth. It's always true. And that also was so wonderful. See, Prabhupada didn't deal in any relative truths. He had a mission, we say, Prabhupada, is all he did was give Krishna. And if you tried to get something relative, just you wouldn't hear it. When you had some difficulty, he never gave you some material solution. He would always say, chant Hare Krishna, read my books, just engage in devotional service. You would know it. As a servant, when people would come and talk and I would see letters, I was with them for a few months, and I mean, I knew sometimes what Prabhupada was going to say, because he didn't ever compromise. Never just gave Krishna. Because anything short of that, you're just wasting your time and their time. So is all you did in the temple, you heard about Krishna from Krishna book. This was all new to us. We didn't know Krishna. We didn't know Krishna book stories about Krishna's birth and his childhood pastimes. And it was so amazing. And then you would hear about Prabhupada. Prabhupada said this, and Prabhupada was doing that. Even at this time, as soon as you went in the temple, Prabhupada was everything to us. And at the time I joined, Prabhupada was just traveled to Russia. So that was just amazing. And he was there for 3 days. He was in Russia for 3 days. And now when you go to the Mayapur festival, half of the devotees in Mayapur festival are from Russia. Prabhupada was there for 3 days, walking around Red Square, made one disciple, initiated one person. And from that, so this is the power of a pure devotee. This is the desire of the pure devotee. So back at that time, you would become there was no question, when you became a devotee, you just wanted to be Prabhupada's disciple. Just very quickly. So as soon as you could, you would do that. So I had to wait 3 months. And I was, as I said, I was kind of under the guidance of Kirtanananda. He was Swami at the time. And he was Prabhupada's first initiated disciple. And he was Prabhupada's first sannyasi. And New Vrindavan, I was living on a farm. I was from a big city, Philadelphia. It was 5 million people. And I became a devotee, and here I was working on a farm in New Vrindavan, and milking cows and fixing fences for the cows and working in a barn. But it was all ecstasy. So I got my opportunity to see Prabhupada the first time in July of 1971 in New York City. That was the Brooklyn Temple, it was called the Henry Street Temple. And I went there, of course, to get initiated. And because I was with Kirtanananda, even though I was just a young boy, I was 19 years old, I just turned 20 in June, so I was just a 20-year-old boy. I was a devotee for 3 months, and I was on New Vrindavan, which was, didn't mean much to anything. But because I was with Kirtanananda, I got to be close to Prabhupada. Like, Vyasa-san would be in the center there at the back of the temple room. And Kirtanananda, he would stand right there. He had his danda, he was a sannyasi. And I would get to be next to him. So even though there were over 200 devotees in the temple room, somehow or other, I was near Srila Prabhupada. And being right next to Kirtanananda. So I was right here by the Vyasa-san. And the Vyasa-san was very low. The cushion was on that step. So Prabhupada was right there. And that was the first time I got to see Srila Prabhupada. It was like July 6th, 1971. And Prabhupada was initiating 10 people a day. And he did that for 10 days. Everyone would come to New York from all the surrounding areas, temples. And that meant he had a chant on the beads for all these devotees. He would do after his breakfast, that's when the fire, he would have the fire jug in the temple room, and Prabhupada would chant on everyone one round, on everyone's beads. And we didn't, we didn't have temple stewards, and there weren't people going to India bringing back things. We made our beads. You had to string them up, you learned how to string beads, and we had to make our neck beads. And nothing was Tulsi, it was just wood from a bead shop, like a hippie bead store. Usually there were plastic or something, and you would get any kind of wood. So that's what you did the morning you were initiated, was early in the morning you were making your beads and making your neck beads. And those that were getting Brahmin initiation had to make Brahmin threads. So it was very, very sweet. So it was, again, I said it was July, and in New York City, the summer can be very hot. And so the first day I got to see Srila Prabhupada was in the temple room, and Prabhupada was on the Vyasasan. And you know, this was, again, this was like what you live for. When we, basically, devotees, at that time, you managed until you got to see Prabhupada, and then you might go on however long it might be. It might be a month or 6 months or a year, 2 years, but whatever it was, your idea was always just to get Srila Prabhupada's darshan, just to hear him speak, just to see Srila Prabhupada. So this was the first time I was getting to see Srila Prabhupada. And you know, everyone talks about seeing Srila Prabhupada in some way or another, and just like I just saw him in my dream last night, and after not seeing him for so long, that same feeling is there. You just are overwhelmed with seeing Prabhupada, because Prabhupada is very effulgent. You know, there's no way. One thing I say is, like, Prabhupada looked like he was in color, and the whole rest of the world was black and white. You know, like he just shone, and his clothes were bright, and his body, his skin was literally golden color, such a beautiful color. And I would massage, eventually I got to massage him. So every day he would massage his whole body with oil, mustard oil on his body, sandalwood oil on his head. So his body was always shining and always so fragrant. But the first time after you got over seeing him, and Prabhupada was not real tall, but he seemed like he was very, very big, you know. We always imagine Prabhupada was extra big, but he sat on the Vyasasan just like he's sitting there. But everyone, you would always, once you got over your shyness and anxiety and fear and awe, you would have to look at Prabhupada and look into his eyes. And his eyes, you know, that was, like they say, the eyes are what, the windows to the soul. And Prabhupada's eyes, you would see all of those qualities that were so wonderful with Srila Prabhupada. And you would see his compassion and his love. And even though we'd always had that tendency to feel so fallen in front of Srila Prabhupada, but it was okay. You know, that's the compassion. Prabhupada never judged any of us. You know, it's not like he was looking and he saw all of, he was looking at all your sins and all of your past lives and all. It was all he saw devotees. Prabhupada would often say, my disciples are all pure devotees. He saw people that were enthusiastic to serve Krishna, and he just wanted to increase that. So these are the kind of things you would say. So I was there that first day, and the temple room was packed. It was not even as wide as this room, and a little bit longer, but only half the width. And there would be all women on one side of the temple room, and from the front to the back there would just be an opening, because the men were on one side, women on the other. And there was an aisle down the middle. Prabhupada could always see the deities. So no one ever blocked Srila Prabhupada's vision of the deities. And it was just packed up. And people were at the door, and people were at the windows outside looking in. Everyone just, that's how crowded it was. So there was this very nice kirtan going on. And Prabhupada was there, and Prabhupada would play quartets. Sometimes he would play the gong, you know. But very often he would play cartels. And he would love to see everyone dancing. He would smile seeing the devotees dancing. And of course, we were all jumping up and down with Prabhupada there. And it was very hot, as I said, that day. It was like 90 degrees and 95 degrees. The temple room was probably over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And of course, then the kirtan would stop. And Prabhupada would say the prayers. And we would all get down on our hands and knees, offer obeisances. So now the temple room, which was completely packed with everyone standing up, Now we had to get down on our hands and knees, so you take up 2-3 times as much space, but somehow or other you would get down, and no one just stood there like this. Prabhupada was there. We all got down on our hands and knees, and we're all just like bunched up together. And Prabhupada went and said the prayers, and I was right here, right there next to Prabhupada. And I said, offered my obeisances at the end very quickly, because I just wanted to look at Prabhupada. So after we all offered our obeisances and Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna, and then I sat up to look at Prabhupada again. And when I sat up, there was someone behind me still offering his obeisances, and everyone around was still, so I had nowhere to get up. So I sat up and I started to sit up, and I sat on the devotee Brahmachari's head behind me. So he became upset that I sat up. So he pushed me off of his head. So when he pushed me off of his head, I fell. And I fell right on the Prabhupada. Right on Prabhupada's, right across his lap, right at his feet. I just lunged and I lost. And I fell right across. And Prabhupada looked down and he said, "What is the difficulty?" And that was my first meeting with Srila Prabhupada. So that's the title of the book. It's something I heard Prabhupada over the next 2.5 years I was with him. He said so many times, Prabhupada would say. He had different things he would say, and that was one of them. What is the difficulty? So they were the very first words Prabhupada spoke to me. Is what is the difficulty? And that's how I got to meet him. So that was it. I just shrank back into my seat. And I didn't respond, of course. I learned right away, don't say anything. And that would be reaffirmed many times as I was with Prabhupada. If he asked you what you were doing, if you tried to give any answer, he would just, you know, there was never a good answer. You know, there couldn't be a good answer. So I would become quiet. So that time I became quiet as well. So then the next day, I was initiated by Srila Prabhupada. I got first initiation by Srila Prabhupada. And as I said, it was very exciting in the morning. And we didn't know, you know, we didn't know anything. You know, we would read Krishna book and we would fumble over every Sanskrit word in it other than Krishna and Radharani, you know. You know, so many words were difficult to say. We were just learning everything. But we just all wanted to serve, you know, perform devotional service for Srila Prabhupada. So that day I was about the third or fourth person to be initiated. Rabindra Swarup was initiated that day as well, and his wife, the GBC here. And Kushakrata was initiated that day. And a one boy named Shruta Dave and Ashruta Shrava and Kirti Raj. And so there were a lot of Shrutas and different Kirtis, and I got the name Shruta Kirti. But I was called by the secretary. That was the process. Secretary would call your name. We're all Bhakta this and Bhakta that and Bhaktin. So, and you would have to, we would, you know, try to meditate on what it was we were supposed to do, because it was very difficult. You had to remember to offer your obeisances, your dandavats with your left side. We were given all these instructions because we didn't even know what we were doing. And we were so nervous to be in front of Prabhupada. We were just completely nervous. And so I was called, so I left side towards the Vyasasan, so I did that. And you always knew Prabhupada was going to ask you, what are the regulative principles? So you would just sit in your place and you would go over them in your head, because you couldn't always remember all of them either. You know, you were following them all, but you couldn't remember them if Prabhupada asked you, because Prabhupada asked you a question, so immediately your brain would just cease to function. So I was sitting in my place and I was saying, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication. So like that, you know. So sure enough, Prabhupada called me up and I offered my obeisances. I did it correctly. And then he said, and what are the regulative principles? And I rattled. I said, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. And he just nodded. And then he said, and how many rounds? do you chant? And I said, oh, I said, oh, Prabhupada, I said, I'm chanting 20 rounds a day. And he looked at me and went, sure you are. Like, today you are, we'll see how long you're chanting your 20 rounds. So I was like proud I was chanting 20 rounds a day, and Prabhupada just went, And then he said, your name is Sruta Kirti. And that was the first time I ever heard that name. And he looked at me and he said, Sruta Kirti is the name of Krishna. He said, and it means one whose activities are world famous. And everyone in the temple room went, Hari Bol. And Prabhupada looked at me and he said, and you were Sruta Kirti Das. And then he handed me my beads. And again I offered obeisances. And then I went back. I was like halfway up in the temple room and I sat down. My godbrother said to me, what's your name? I said, I don't know. Because he just didn't know, you know. So at the end of the ceremony in the kirtan, then you would go in front of Prabhupada's quarters on his door, the Sanskrit editor, he would post your name, you know, your Karmi name, and then he would post your new name, your Sanskrit name, and it would have the diacritic mark, so we would go up there and we would write our names down so we wouldn't forget what our name was for the next few days as everyone started calling you by your new name. So it was all very exciting, and we just, you know, at that time, right, we just knew, we were just, our life, we were just sold out to Prabhupada and Krishna, and there was no question that we would ever do anything else with our lives except engage in devotional service. There was no question. We didn't want anything. We just wanted to serve Prabhupada and serve Krishna. And that was all coming from Srila Prabhupada. All these feelings, all these desires that we had to serve Krishna was all coming. Because Prabhupada was just so pure and so focused and so... He just had so much love for us. We just wanted to reciprocate that. You could see that all the time. You always felt that. And Prabhupada would say that. Huh? We always say, in his kind, there were so many things. You know, I guess they're still said sometimes. But what was everything based on? I would say everything, devotional services, what is it based on? Two things.
Love and trust.
Love and trust. He knows, because that's all you knew. Everything was love and trust. And we knew Prabhupada loved us and he was completely dedicated to us and he trusted us, and we also had faith in Prabhupada. There was no question that something was going to happen with Prabhupada. He was going to disappear or something. He was going to take the money and go to the, you know, go to the Caribbean. You know, Prabhupada was just, he was just faithful servant of Krishna. And we knew everything he told us, we could just do it and we would become Krishna conscious. And he convinced us that if we just chanted 16 rounds and followed the regulative principles, that we would become pure devotees. And at the end of this life, we could go back home, back to Godhead. I mean, we thought like that, right? We just knew that by Prabhupada's mercy, just by Prabhupada's mercy, we could become Krishna conscious. He convinced us. He made it seem like it was just so easy to be Krishna conscious. Just follow his instructions. And he would just take us there. And it wouldn't be difficult. We just thought it was going to be very easy. He said one time on a morning walk, this was in Australia, in Melbourne, 1975, and he was walking along and he said, so, he said, the devotee, he said, is he simple or is he crooked? And whenever Prabhupada would ask a question, everyone would become filled with anxiety, like, because if you gave the wrong answer, I mean, bzz, you know, couldn't be a devotee anymore. It was always a test, you know. We always thought Prabhupada was testing us. And if we didn't pass the test, then you'd be finished. But it was never like that. You know, there was never any question of failure. You know, and he wanted to know. So, but we would all stop. And everyone knew what they wanted to say. It might be one or the other, but they knew what they felt. But people would be afraid to say it because you thought, I might say the wrong thing, you know. So he would stop, you know, his cane, poke it in the ground, and he'd say, so, again, he said, so the devotee, he's simple or crooked? What do you think? How many think the devotee is simple? Okay. About half. The other, how many think the devotee is crooked? So one devotee said, it was a moga, and he ventured, he said, Prabhupada, the devotee is simple, right? We know that simplicity, that's a quality of a devotee, right? You never see crookedness as being a quality of a devotee. So he said, the devotee is simple. And Prabhupada smiled. He said, no. He said, the devotee is crooked. He said, just like all of you, he said, you're all here. He said, I have tricked you into chanting Hare Krishna. Because we say, just chant Hare Krishna, your life will be sublime. How many's lives are sublime here? How many feel sublime all the time? Yeah, so we come in, and in the beginning, Krishna gives us that taste, right? Lord Chaitanya opens that storehouse of love of Godhead, and we feel it. But then he takes himself back, and then you have to earn, huh? You have to earn that. You have to earn Krishna, to show Krishna. You don't want anything else. Nothing else. So that's what Prabhupada said is, he was crooked. He said, because we say you just chant Hare Krishna and your life will be sublime. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And it is the only way. But we see it takes something. We have to give. We have to give up everything. That's the process. But Prabhupada made that process so wonderful. It wasn't difficult. And he would say that. What's the difficulty? Huh? What is the difficulty? He would say, nothing is ours anyway. What belongs to us do we have to give up? Nothing belongs to us. Not even these bodies. And these were the things Prabhupada showed so nicely over the time I was with him. Even his body, Prabhupada just gave himself completely. Because he took good care of his body. He engaged it fully in Krishna's service. He would take a morning walk every morning. Every morning at sunrise. It didn't matter where he was traveling to, or if he traveled 12 hours and arrived at 2 o'clock in the morning. As soon as the sun was coming up, Prabhupada was out there walking with his disciples. And sometimes we didn't feel like walking in the morning. We had our jet lag. And Prabhupada never even said the word jet lag. You know, now we use it as we travel around, say, yeah, you know, it might not be at the morning program of jet lag, have to recover for a few days. Prabhupada, he just was so regulated everywhere he went. He'd be on the morning walk. He would take his massage. He didn't take it because it wasn't sense gratification. It was because it was good for circulation in his body. He would eat very regulated. He ate nice, simple breakfast. Fruits and yogurt or milk. And he always had his sandesh and rasgulla. So they were like tonics. Rice chapatis and dal for lunch every day and a little something in the evening, but always very regulated. But part of keeping healthy so we can serve Krishna. He wasn't, you know, he didn't stay up 4 days in a row and do chapters of Bhagavatam. Every day in the morning he would, early in the morning, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, he would be translating for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. But then he would go on his morning walk, he would give class in the morning. So regulated he was. But that's all part of being a devotee and serving Krishna. So they were my first days there in New York. And they were very short. And then I went back to New Vrindavan. Where again, I was doing different things and working under Kirtananda's guidance. And everyone, like we all did, we just, there was no question of like not going to Mangalarti or class, all these things. We had what we called the ISKCON sandwich. Ever hear of the ISKCON sandwich? That was, you had the morning program, and then service all day, and then the evening program. So that was your sandwich. So these things always went on. And these were Prabhupada. This was Prabhupada's method. Class in the morning, so you, from Srimad Bhagavatam, and Bhagavad Gita in the evening, service all day, which everyone went out. It's like Harinam. That's what we did all day, was Harinam. Even though there were just a few thousand devotees around the whole world, people would have, if you asked them, they probably would have thought there were millions of devotees, because everywhere they went, they saw us. These people in their robes, you know, funny robes and shaved heads and tilak. We were banging cymbals and kartels and bongos and mrdungas, whatever. You know, we were making a lot of noise in the 70s. So the only people that stayed back were the pujari, the cook, the person cooking and cleaning. Otherwise, you went out on Harinam, or book distribution as that came in. No one stayed back in the temple. So, and Prabhupada encouraged this. He would say, you know, the people would go out 10 hours a day on book distribution. You know, and Prabhupada would say, those that go out and do this, they get extra mercy. So imagine, people wanted extra mercy. You're already getting mercy. But then he would say, you can get extra mercy. So he was giving extra mercy to everyone. So it was very nice. And because of that, naturally, you did feel ecstasy and bliss. You know, it comes from tapasya. That's what Lord Brahma said, right, that first word, tapasya. If we're not feeling anything, it's because we're not giving everything. You know? And Prabhupada would say that. If the process, he would say, is a scientific process. It's Krishna consciousness. It's a scientific process. He said, and if you're not feeling ecstasy, you have to see what it is you're not doing, or maybe what it is you are doing that you shouldn't be doing. He said, because the process is a science, and if you follow, the result will be there. So he made everything, it was so clear, everything Prabhupada said was very clear. So we were all following this process, and imagine, we were all children. Here was Prabhupada, and that's what was so nice. Prabhupada loved to associate with his disciples, his followers. He enjoyed associating with devotees. And, you know, I myself, we see more and more how the most... And Prabhupada gave us so many things, right? You see all these books, which we know, we say they're the law books for the next 10,000 years. Of course, he gave us all the Maha Mantra, so many things, but the thing we see as we get older and older, around for so many years, is he gave us each other. He gave us association of devotees. Imagine, there were no devotees of Krishna outside of India. If you were lived outside, that's considered hell. Where there's no devotees, that place is hell. If you're living somewhere and you can't associate with devotees of Krishna, that's a hellish condition. Yeah, and then you say, what? You know, what have I done to deserve this? What can I do to have association of devotees? But Prabhupada has made it so everywhere you go, we have association of devotees. And this is the most important thing. Prabhupada would say, the most important thing is that association. Because devotees are very kind, you know, they'll encourage you in your service, they'll criticize you when they see you doing something wrong. This is all actually good. What did Prabhupada's spiritual master? Prabhupada would quote that many times. He would say, My friends are my enemies, and my enemies are my friends. You can learn so much. Your friends are your enemies, because they make you think, oh yes, everything is very nice, I'm very nice, I'm very wonderful, I'm situated so nicely. But those that criticize you, they're your friends, because they make you look at yourself. That's the hardest. That's the hardest person to look at. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that only because I'm honeycombed with faults that I take to the task of seeing faults in others. So that's all we can see. The faults we see in others, there are faults. There are faults we have in ourselves. So anyway, we don't want to get too philosophical here. We have to talk about Srila Prabhupada in this pastime. So I went back to New Vrindavan. I was milking cows and doing all those things. And then my next opportunity to see Srila Prabhupada didn't come until it was July. So now it was May of 1972. So that was 9 months later. Yes, 9 months later. So now I had been in the temple for a year. And we drove in a van, a cargo van, six of us. Kirtanananda was there in the front seat and the driver. And we were all in the back of this windowless van. We drove across country in the United States. It was 5,000 kilometers. It took us like 4 or 5 days to drive across country. Again, it was in, you know, warm season, so... But just to see Srila Prabhupada. So we went 3,000 miles. And then, of course, after you had to go back, the next 3,000 miles back to New Vrindavan. But he was going to be in Los Angeles for a week. I think it was his only stop in the USA at that time. And I was going there and I was going to get Brahmin initiation. So I was excited about that. And we got there. And Los Angeles Temple, that was the headquarters. That was headquarters of ISKCON, not just headquarters in the West. It was pretty much the ISKCON headquarters was New Dwarka. They had the best deity worship and the prettiest temple at that time. And there were no temples in India. We didn't have any buildings then. And it was a very pretty place. And Prabhupada would spend a lot of time in the West. Prabhupada stayed in Los Angeles more than anywhere else in the West. That was his headquarters. And when we got there, again, it was Kirtananda took us, myself and a godbrother of mine, who's like my same age, who's like a brother, Kaladri, and a few others. And again, because I was with Kirtananda, I got to be around Prabhupada, which was getting harder and harder for many devotees as things were expanding now. This was rapid growth going on in 70, 71, 72, 73, you know, temples went from 12 temples to 40 temples. And so Krishna consciousness was expanding very rapidly all around the world. And now there was book distribution going on. And so on the morning walks, Prabhupada would be there and you would get the sannyasis now. There were, you know, a dozen or so sannyasis. So they would get to go on the morning walk if they were there, and temple presidents and maybe one or two book distributors. But I got to go on the morning walks because I was with Kirtananda. So I just was fortunate like that. So then, better than that was Prabhupada every afternoon, as the sun was just starting to go down, Prabhupada would sit in his garden in Los Angeles. There are many pictures, a picture in here. But it was a small garden, about the size of your garden in the front. And there was a 6-foot wall, cinder block wall that went around it. Many of you have seen pictures, Prabhupada sitting in his garden there. And there would only be 5, 6, 7, 8 devotees in there. And Prabhupada would go in, and those that got to go in, and I got to go in there every evening. And I was just happy to be in there. And Prabhupada would just sit, like he just had a small seat like this. There was a trellis that went over him, little bushes going around. And it was a very pretty place, planted very nicely. And Prabhupada said it was his favorite place in the whole world. He said it was that garden in Los Angeles. He said it was his favorite place in the whole world. And he said it was Vrindavan. That garden, he said, was everywhere Prabhupada went was Vrindavan. But he said this garden, he said, is Vrindavan. He said, because there were so many tulsi plants in there. And they planted banana trees and rose bushes. It was just very attractive. And Prabhupada always liked to sit outside like that and chant. He liked to be in the nature, in the grass. He didn't care about big buildings, and he liked to go outside in the sun and fresh air. So he would just go out there and he would sit there and he would chant and he would talk. And we did this every day for like a week. I got to do this, and every day I got to go in this garden, and I was just a young brahmachari. I wasn't Prabhupada's servant yet or anything, but I got to go in it. In fact, I not only got to go, I got the Krishna book. Somebody handed me the Krishna book, because Prabhupada would listen to Krishna book in the garden, just like we would read Krishna book amongst ourselves. So they handed me and say, Prabhupada reads Krishna book, so when he says, you read it. Which was funny, because I was reading Krishna book in New Vrindavan to the devotees. That's the service Kirtanananda gave me, was reading Krishna book every night before we went to bed. So I had the Krishna book, but we would just sit there. And again, we were just children. We were all children. Even the elder ones were 25 years old or something. You know, we were literally just barely teenagers, some of us. And we would just look at Prabhupada, and he would just sit there and he would chant japa. You know, and then sometimes he would say something, and every word, you know, it didn't matter what he said, we just wanted to hear him say anything. You know? And he would always be so, he would give so much, he would always satisfy us in so many ways. So one day he would sit there, and in Los Angeles, when it wasn't smoggy, it was a very pretty place, very pleasant weather, and the sky could be blue. And so one day Prabhupada was sitting there, and he said, so, he said, what color is Krishna? So now, of course, we all know Krishna is blue, right? We've heard it a million times, Krishna is blue or black. And but as soon as he would ask questions, we would all just, you'd get quiet, because you think, oh, again, it's a trick question. Prabhupada's asking trick questions. So he stopped. So finally, one, there'd always be someone, because you wanted that too, right? Then you were actually like reciprocating with Srila Prabhupada. You were getting to say something, and he was talking to you then, you know, which, that's the perfection of your life. So then one devotee said, Prabhupada, he's dark, like the rain cloud. And Prabhupada said, no. He said he's blue like the sky. He said, that's why the sky is blue. He says, because it's reflecting Krishna's bodily effulgence. He said, therefore the sky is blue. So imagine that every time you looked at the sky, what do you see? You see Krishna. So see, this is, Prabhupada showed us how to see Krishna so many ways. He showed us how to see Krishna, how to taste Krishna, how to see Krishna, how to hear Krishna. But he just said that. It's reflection, the reflection of Krishna's bodily effulgence. Now we can hear so many scientific things, it's blue because, you know, that's the color that comes through the ozone. But for Prabhupada, that's why it was blue. So we just, that was wonderful. So then another time he was sitting and we're chanting. And when Prabhupada was chanting japa, then we would all just chant japa. So we're all chanting japa. And then Prabhupada sat up, and he always sat up straight, but then he sat up very straight and put his chest out. And he said, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. He said, everyone is serving someone. He said, but we're servant of Krishna. He said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, everyone is serving their families, they're serving their boss, say they're serving dogs. He said, but we're Krishna's servants. He said, that's our pride. So even proud, huh? Devotee, all these things are there, huh? In the spiritual world. So even he said, that is our pride. He said, everyone is serving. He said, but we're servants of Krishna. He said, that's our pride. He put his chest out. Again, he said, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And we're sitting there thinking, yes. Prabhupada gave us, imagine, gave us that service to Krishna through Srila Prabhupada. So then he smiled and he laughed. And he said, and we don't care. He said, even if Krishna isn't God, he said, we're serving him. He said, because he's so wonderful. He said, we love him. He said, maybe he's God, maybe he's not God. He said, but still, we're serving Krishna. So this is the mood, right? The gopis. This is the mood in Vrindavan. They don't know Krishna is God. If you're serving him, God, that's not the highest realization, is it? No, we just love Krishna so much. So this was Prabhupada. He said, we don't. Then he got in. That's a whole other level. Yeah? Imagine, here we are, we don't know anything, and now he's telling us, and we got like, oh my God, what if he's not God? You know, this is, I remember I worked with my uncle for many years, and he always say that, well, you know, right, that's a gambler. You think, well, if there is a God, then it's good, to do something just in case there is, right? Because you want to do some service to God in case God exists, you know. But that's a very low-level mentality. Prabhupada said, we don't care if he's God. He's this beautiful boy. And that's as soon as we became devotees, as soon as we went into the temple, the first thing we heard about was Krishna is a cowherd boy. And now you hear some people say, I've heard these things from my own ears. Saying, Prabhupada taught us Krishna, he's the supreme personality. I'm here to tell you he's a cowherd boy. Prabhupada told me that in 1971. It's the very first thing I learned was Krishna was a cowherd boy. If I forget it, that's my difficulty. Not because all these things are there. Prabhupada gave us all these things. So that is our pride. Huh? Imagine, we get the association of Krishna, Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya, Navadvipa. Prabhupada gave us everything. It's up to us to take it. It was all the things we would always hear. You just have to step into the sunshine. The sunshine's there. It's not that it's not there. But we're just not willing to step into the sunshine. So many things again to talk about over the next few days, and we'll just be touching on some of these things. Should
we do the Krishna books? Story.
Yes, so we'll stay in the garden a little bit. And so this went on for every day. Now I'm getting to read Prabhupada Krishna book stories. So this one day I'm reading this Krishna one story about Krishna and Balaram. And Balaram kills this demon. So we're all just sitting there listening, And we're enjoying hearing about Krishna and Balaram and the demons. And I said something in the story about Balaram killed this demon. And Prabhupada started laughing and laughing. And we were all just, we were shocked, Because again, being a devotee, be serious and grave and so many things. And Prabhupada, he could appear like he was, that's what he was like, very grave and serious. And here he was laughing just like a young boy or something, hearing this Krishna book story. So of course we all laughed and laughed. As soon as Prabhupada laughed, we just all started laughing. And that was, for me, that was it. I just fell in love with Prabhupada laughing, hearing this Krishna book story. And he was just like we were. He was enjoying hearing about Krishna. He wasn't like listening to make sure that everything was grammatically correct and, they edited it properly. He was enjoying hearing about Krishna. He was enjoying it. This is the pleasure of devotees, hear about topics about Krishna and the devotees. Prabhupada was in ecstasy and he exposed it as he was laughing as Krishna killed this demon. So that was it. I thought, next day, got to read about demons, because Prabhupada really likes to hear about Krishna killing the demons. So again, I told you, I used to read Krishna book. One of my services in New Vrindavan was Kirtananda said, you read Krishna book, and at nighttime you have to tell us the story. Not read the story. I had to tell the story. best as I could remember it. And I used to try to remember like every last detail, you know. And then I would tell the story. So I had my favorite story about Krishna killing, about my favorite demon. I had my favorite demon. Again, I was 19, 20 years old. And my favorite Krishna book story about the demons. And I always ask everyone, sometimes some of the people get it. What story would I want to read, Prabhupada? Anyone know? Krishna and the demons. Anyway, it was a story of David Gorilla. That was like, because I thought that was really funny. And this was a funny demon, you know. And he was a really, he was a real rascal, huh? And so he was this big black gorilla, huge, and he was very mischievous. He was a monkey after all, right? He was. Did you ever see monkeys or any, what they, things that they do? They do all kinds of obnoxious things, and he qualified. He did obnoxious things. So I just figured I'm going to read this story, and very early in the story, he does something that, when you're a young boy, just, I thought it was hysterical. And for some reason, I just figured Prabhupada was also going to find this really hysterical. And when we got into the garden, I had it all set. I had my little bookmark, you know, right on the page to read the story of David Gorilla. And my heart was just beating. And, you know, one thing, Prabhupada always knew what was going on in our minds. And it's something I never knew. I was with him for 2.5 years. And I knew he knew like how I would think, just like you know what your children are like, you know, you can know. Like, remember my mother would always say, I have eyes in the back of my head, you know, because I always think, how does she know I did this? Or how does she know? And she would say, I have eyes in the back of my head. So, you know, I knew Prabhupada by associating with this new tendencies we had and the way we were. But Prabhupada actually knew things that we were doing. I mean, he knew. I'll tell you stories over the next few days. It was just completely mystical magic, how Prabhupada just knew everything. So anyway, I'm sure Prabhupada knew everything I was doing that day, but that was the furthest thing from my mind. I was so covered over in illusion, I didn't even consider, you know, that my spiritual master knew me so completely. So I'm sitting there with the book, you know, and Prabhupada would go in and sit in the garden and he would talk and he would chant. And he wouldn't tell me to read. He would just go like that. Because I was sitting just like you with the book. So all he had to do was look at me. And I knew, okay, I'm supposed to read. And it was like that as his servant. You know, he didn't have to say a whole lot. That's a first class purpose. A first class servant, you don't ask him. He knows what to do. He said, in the second class servant, you ask him, and he does it. And he said, in the third class servant, he said, you ask him, and he doesn't do it, or he does it begrudgingly. He said, that's... So Prabhupada went like that. So I opened up the book, and my heart's racing. So I start reading, and of course, there's a big fire sacrifice going on, right? Being performed by all the Brahmins. So what happens? The vid gorilla comes up from behind the bushes, and he starts passing urine, spooling urine in the fire sacrifice. So I thought that was really hilarious. So I start, and I can hardly even get the words out because I'm just anticipating what's going to happen. And I said it, and as soon as I said it, Prabhupada started laughing and laughing and slapping his knee, and he's laughing hysterically. So everyone started, because it was funny in the context of the story, it was very funny. But Prabhupada made it, just changed everything. What was funny to us just became seeing Prabhupada. He was just right there. You know, Prabhupada was right there in the story. And that's the way Prabhupada was. He was like eternally engaged in these pastimes with Krishna. It wasn't just hearing, you know. And these things are there. When we hear these things, these are real, these are eternal, they're spiritual, they're happening. And Prabhupada just laughed and laughed and kept laughing and laughing. And I saw him do this a few times where he would start slapping his, you know, they say a knee slapper. I don't know. In America, when something's really funny, you call it a knee slapper. And that's what Prabhupada did. So we were all, he had just put us in a complete ecstasy. There was nothing more exciting than seeing Prabhupada laugh, you know. And he was just like a little boy. He could be childlike. And for me, that was my whole, when you hear mostly what you're going to hear, I think over the next few days, if I don't get sidetracked into too much philosophy, this book is all, it's so that it says, what's it say? Intimate moments in the personal circle. That's what I cherished with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, he translated 80 books, and he gave so many classes every day, and he could defeat every philosophy and all the scientists. I just love seeing Prabhupada outside of all those things. Because to me, this was all Prabhupada's service, coming here, right? As a Nitya Siddha, coming here to free all of us from our position here in the material world. So what I like to see was Prabhupada, what was just in the spiritual world, just being himself, that Nitya Siddha, enjoying his relationship with Krishna in the most intimate way. And that's what I got to witness. And these were the very first times I was getting to witness Prabhupada, just totally this, like a child. And everything else, it didn't matter. This whole, you know, thousands of disciples and 100 temples and all these management things he would deal with, they didn't exist. It didn't even exist. It was amazing to see how he was just completely transcendental. Like we say that, how managing, how difficult it is. You know, we take that service for our spiritual master. We accept that to help spread this mission, Prabhupada's mission of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, we have to be organized. How can you spread Krishna consciousness without organization? So organization means there's going to be difficulties. And Prabhupada dealt with them every day. But as soon as his door closed, it was just like he wasn't doing any of these things. He was reading his books. He was doing bhajans. He was just completely transcendental. He was just in the spiritual world. And nothing else mattered. He was just with Krishna, with Krishna's devotees. And he was just always blissful like that. So I went on with the story. Everything calmed down and I read the story. So this was my first personal service, was reading Krishna book. Most wonderful. Out of everything I did, that was as sweet as anything I did, was right in the beginning, was reading these Krishna book stories, the Prabhupada. And I had no idea how fortunate I was. I was just, as we all were, we were just in the moment with Prabhupada. You know, Hari Sari, he was the first one ever kept a diary. Somehow or other, he kept a diary. We didn't keep diaries about Prabhupada. We were too busy just serving, doing our service. We didn't even think about it. None of his secretaries, none of his servants. We were just there. We didn't realize. I didn't realize. Some had realizations. I was just thought I was with Prabhupada and I was going to be with him doing that eternally, just like we thought we were eternally going to be in the temple doing our service, going out on Harinam. It was all going to be forever. We were young. We didn't know things. Everything was going to be changing and changing all of the time. Always changing. And never thought Srila Prabhupada was going to leave. I thought maybe when he was 100 or so. You know, but that was so far ahead for a young boy like me. I was so foolish. I didn't consider. So these moments, they were all so precious. Right? Every moment was so precious. So then the next day, I had my Krishna book, and we went into the room, and I forgot all about finding a story about a demon. And as soon as we got in and sat down, Prabhupada went, okay. So he didn't give me the opportunity. See, Prabhupada knew, you know. So these were the little games. that were so sweet as well that Prabhupada would do. He would catch you in your little jokes and tricks. So as soon as we sat down, he's, and I went, oh no. And I start looking, and I'm looking for a story for a demon. And that's when he looked at me. He said, read anywhere. He said, Krishna's like a sweet ball. He said, everywhere you bite, he said, is sweet. So then I just went to the next story and started reading. So then I realized, Prabhupada loved all of it, anything about Krishna. It doesn't matter. It's all sweet. I don't have to focus. Everywhere Krishna is sweet. So Prabhupada's like that. Everything he did was sweet. And everything he's still doing. As my godbrother said to me the other day, Ambarish, writing back and forth, and he said, Prabhupada is in control. See, this is what we know. Prabhupada's still in control. He's watching everything. He's helping us. And he said he's boiling the milk. And that's what we would say. Well, we always just say that, right? Prabhupada would use that. He said, now it's time to boil the milk. So he said, he's boiling the milk, he said. Remember, he said, he's boiling the milk, he said, and what did he say about the juice? Some will get cooked in the juice. So if you don't come up to the top in the cream, then you get cooked in the juice. So in other words, we don't have to worry what's happening here and this person's doing this and everything is happening according to Krishna's plan, Lord Chaitanya's plan, Srila Prabhupada's plan. Even when he was here, you know, so we think sometimes, well, this needs correcting. Why is Krishna letting it go on? Everything. Trivikram Maharaj said that to me in 1971. It's a common expression, but to me, I had never heard it before. He said, it all comes out in the wash. You know? Everything. Everyone. We don't have to dole out anyone's punishments. We don't have to judge anyone. Everything gets taken care of. The only person we have to deal with is ourselves. As he was saying. Once Prabhupada had this servant before me. He was a bit critical. And he would come to Prabhupada with things. This person's doing this, and this person's doing this, and, you know. Prabhupada said to him once, he said, be strict with yourself and lenient towards others. And that's the way Prabhupada was. He was an ocean of mercy. What did you say he was? Prabhupada was very what?
Demanding.
Prabhupada wasn't demanding at all. He said that to Allen Ginsberg. Allen Ginsberg said, Prabhupada, you're so, the word he used, you know, so many rules and regulations. Prabhupada laughed. He said, I'm so lenient. He said, if I imposed all the rules and regulations, he said, no one could be a Vaishnava here. So many rules. Radhanath Maharaj, he told us that story, before he came to ISKCON, he was staying, spent some time at the Gaudi Math. So many rules and regulations, even getting a cup of water. You know, everything had to be done so carefully. He told us this funny story. They had a well at the temple and he touched, because you used to have to, with your hand that you would eat from, you had to use just part of your hand to get the cup to wash your hand. And someone saw him, the part of his hand that was moochy, touch something. And so they would fill up a big, like a spa-sized vat of water. So because he did it, the guy yelled, moochy! You know, and they emptied it out in front of him. They emptied out this entire vat of water. And then they washed it down, and then they filled it up, and they emptied it again, and they filled it up again, and they emptied it again. It took them 4 hours. And he just sat there. They just made him sit there and watch as they clean this thing. So this was what Prabhupada grew up in. But imagine, I mean, he called me in when I became his servant. I was his servant for 1 week and we were in Hawaii. He stayed in a hotel room. And I gave him his prasadam and then I went and got it. And someone came and I was in the other room cleaning his plates and someone said, Prabhupada wants to see you. And I said, okay, I'm coming right in. I didn't know yet. I said, I'll be right there. I'm just finishing his plate. So they went back in and they came back. Prabhupada wants to see you now. So I went in, offered obeisances, and Prabhupada said, why haven't you cleaned where you've taken the plate from? These are all standard things we would do. You would take prasadam and you would clean your spot. And you know, there was always a bucket of water with a little cloth in it or a sponge. You had to clean your spot. So I didn't clean the spot. So that was my first chastisement as a servant. And it wasn't a real heavy one, but he said, you know, you're a Brahmin. He said, you're supposed to be a Brahmin. He said, and you don't clean it, you know, where you've taken prasadam. So I said, yes, Prabhupada. But Prabhupada was so lenient with us. He tolerated so much. And sometimes he would chastise us. He said, to help. He said, that's the duty of the spiritual master, is to chastise. It was his duty to do that, to help bring us up in Krishna consciousness. So, we stop here today. Any questions? A few minutes of questions, yes.
Prabhu, you mentioned this, that Srila Prabhupada said you can taste the sweet bowl on all sides, it's all the same. And you were reading Krishna books or anything like that. Mm. But I'm wondering, did Srila Prabhupada have one favorite book that he
would read all. I saw him reading. We'll tell that story, not right now. I think, but he would read, at that time, Krishna book was there, teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which was like Chaitanya Charitamrita, was there, Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavad Gita, and you would go in his room and Prabhupada would be reading, you know, he would just be sitting with his glasses and he would just be reading, relishing his book, and you never thought, like, he had written them, you just felt it when you saw him, that he was just enjoying reading these books that he was telling us to read. And in the same way, he was just relishing hearing about Krishna and the devotees and the philosophy. The favorite was all, loved all of it. Mm. The sky is blue,
yes,
because Krishna's,
and
the ocean.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's not only in the sky, like in the Bible, the goddess in the sky. Mm-hmm. It's also in the ocean.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Some places it's blue when we're fortunate. So he would just show us how to see Krishna in so many things. There was one when I was his servant there on Los Angeles also. Right outside his garden, there was a little pathway and there was jasmine bushes. And jasmine... And there's different kinds of jasmine. This was called star jasmine, or they call it night blooming jasmine, because the fragrance would come out at night. And when this bloomed, there was no sweeter smell, scent, fragrance. It would just, if you had a nice healthy bush, you could just smell it from just a block away. It was just amazing, beautiful smell. And it was right outside the back door going into Prabhupada's garden. And of course, he knew it was there. And he would tell me to bring him, I would bring him like a sprig, you know, one little branch. And at nighttime, I would massage Prabhupada in bed. No oil, just massage his leg, rub his legs and his feet and sometimes his back like that. And he would lie in bed and he would just hold that jasmine up to his nose. That's how it was, so nice. So the one time I brought it in and I just gave it to Prabhupada and I was rubbing his feet and Prabhupada went, he said, this is Krishna. And that was it. So we say, like, everyone wants to see Krishna. Well, Krishna is everywhere. He's everywhere. You just have to understand. I mean, what could smell like that? You can't make that smell chemically, can you? Like, they have these things, you know, like, just like the taste of sugar. I mean, anyone that had a diet soda, it makes you want to vomit. It's so disgusting, the aftertaste of a diet, you know, so-called sweetener. They're not sweet. But these real things, that come, these come from Krishna. So when you smell a flower, brother, he said, ah, this is Krishna. So then you see this guy, that's Krishna. You know, see, in everything in this creation, you know, amazing things, so many amazing things. So Prabhupada made all it so practical, so easy. Anyone can see Krishna. That's a good question. One thing is there are many people, many devotees, when Prabhupada was with us on the planet, never saw Prabhupada personally, and yet they feel that that personal association with him, and also feel the separation after Prabhupada's leaving. I mean, he is there personally, you know. That's what Prabhupada said. He never felt separated from his spiritual master. And he would say he only saw him a few times. You know, not that he saw him so many times. I know, just like Bir Krishna Maharaj, I know he never even spoke with Srila Prabhupada. But he certainly feels, you know, the personal, it comes through service. You know, by serving, actually, you get, that is personal. That's what Prabhupada gave us. Everything is right. Prabhupada destroyed voidism and impersonalism. It's, you know, interesting. I mean, everything about Krishna consciousness is personal, but it is our very lack in our nature of impersonalism that we've, you know, very often we manage to make it impersonal. You know, many times devotees can be rather impersonal. Prabhupada was so personal, and he dealt with, and you know, that's what we got to see, whether it was with us ourselves, and you know, just like again over the next few days, Vijayananda wrote, he's my godbrother, and he never had any personal association with Prabhupada, and he helped me. He did a lot of editing in the book, and he was my first production manager back 10 years ago. And he said, I made him a person. He says here, you made him a person for me. As he started working on this book, and started doing some editing and helping with it, he saw Prabhupada in a way he had never seen him before, or heard about him before. And many people said things like that. I mean, I have, appreciations have come from some of my God brothers were doing initiations that just were amazed at, you know, that they felt very close. So these things are like kind of spiritual realities. It can still be gotten. You know, we can all feel it. But there has to be that service. You know, service has to be there, right?
I know a story about Marty. Mm-hmm. She was at the manor again. Prabhupada was leaving and she started to cry. And she said, Prabhupada, I can't bear separation from you. And he said, this is just my material body. He said, if you're chanting Hare Krishna and I'm chanting Hare Krishna, there is no separation.
Everyone heard? Yes. Yes. Hare Krishna.
Firstly, I must say thank you very much for telling us the episodes of Srila Prabhupada. I must also admit I'm not a devotee, I'm just an outsider. But you are right when you said that Srila Prabhupada is there because we happen to be lucky to be in the Durban Rath Yatra this last month. And so many things were happening there, and there were so many things which were adverse, like they were expecting some rain and wind and whatnot. But everything got aside. And everybody admitted or agreed that Srila Prabhupada was watching at the top, and he said, let me see my devotees, how much faith they have, and they'll perform it. And they did perform the Rath Yatra for 5 days continuously, and nothing happened. So I definitely believe that Srila Prabhupada is there. Mm-hmm. It's a question of whether it's in books, in his devotees like you, mm-hmm. or where it is, there is, he is there all the time.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's not possible that we're here. See, that's the thing. We can't ourselves, we can't approach Krishna. We can't do any service for Krishna without Srila Prabhupada's being there, huh, in between. He was always the spiritual master, right? Is the via media, transparent. Everything Prabhupada passes right on to his spiritual master goes to his spiritual master. This is the cyclic succession. So one, that requires a pure devotee. So Prabhupada was always showed that. I never saw Prabhupada. I was with him for so long. Prabhupada had no secrets going on, you know. Only just wanted to serve Krishna. And he never asked for anything for himself. He never cared about if he was given this place to stay or that place to stay. He was never interested. Even how his servants came about. Prabhupada didn't handpick servants or just whatever Krishna provided. He just wanted to serve Krishna. He just completely was dedicated in his service to Krishna. And happy. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I was surprised about when you talked about Prabhupada and his actually he could see Krishna in any smell or whatever he sees in the sky. But very often when I started, I heard that we should not put too much emphasis on this because it's sense gratification and all this. But actually, Prabhupada seemed to be using sense gratification in a way.
Yes.
Just to see how beautiful.
We have to, that's what we do. That is our sense gratification, is to, you know, enjoy. That's when they get at Arati, we pass the flower around to, you know, take that that Krishna has enjoyed, been offered to eating prasadam. You know, that was, we were, that's the other thing, when we were, we lived for the Sunday feast. You know, we would eat so austere all week, and then we had these amazing Sunday feasts that devotees, men and women alike, would eat mounds of prasadam. And Prabhupada loved to see the devotees taking prasadam. That was our sense gratification. And what happened? He said you become purified by it, by eating Krishna prasadam. No, we have to enjoy spiritually. Otherwise we're going to seek lesser enjoyment, huh? Material enjoyment. And that's what Krishna consciousness is all about. And like I said, Prabhupada, he took pleasure in seeing the devotees dancing and chanting, taking prasadam. He enjoyed seeing his disciples. When I look back, I think how amazing Prabhupada was. He really liked being around all his young disciples. Sometimes when I think, like, I can't, you know, we can't tolerate being around younger people or something. Prabhupada loved this, you know, because we were all enthusiastically serving Krishna. And he saw us, you know, these people, these Westerners, taking to Krishna consciousness. No one thought it was ever going to happen. His godbrothers didn't think it was going to happen. Everyone thought he would come back to Vrindavan a failure. That's what they expected. They expected him to fail. He'll be back next year, 2 years. He's, you know, he's a wonderful devotee, but he's old and he can't make these people devotees. They don't understand. Prabhupada, he knew, you know, Prabhupada knew. And he loved seeing it. And he said, we were pure devotees, pure Vaishnavas. So I think we should stop here for today. And we'll continue on tomorrow morning and evening and Sunday, the Sunday feast, and Monday morning. And I did bring some copies of this. We managed to get a few dozen in our easy jet luggage. So anyone interested in that, we can also have that. Yes. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. Hare Krishna.
Disgrace of the Krishna ki jai.